Listen to all of Weill Cornell Medicine's informative podcasts at weillcornell.org/podcasts.
Welcome to Weill Cornell Medicine CancerCast, conversations about new developments in medicine, cancer care, and research. I'm your host, Dr. John Leonard, and today's topic will be on the link between sugar and cancer. Today's guest is Dr. Lewis Cantley, the director of the Sandra and Edward Meyer Cancer Center at Weill Cornell Medicine, whose recent laboratory research suggests that high fructose corn syrup can promote colon tumor growth. To start with, Dr. Cantley, what was the reason for initiating this research program?
Well, we've noticed that over the last 20 years or so, there's been approximately a doubling of the rate of colorectal cancer in young adults under the age of 35. And that's a rather striking statistic. And it's beginning to remind us of what we noticed back in the 60s, that lung cancer rates were going up at a very high, becoming much higher. And in trying to understand what had changed, the one thing that had correlated was an increase 20 years or so earlier in the consumption of cigarettes. So if we go back, 20 years to 40 years ago and ask what really has changed in the American diet and lifestyle, the one thing that really dramatically has increased is the consumption of sugary beverages, in particular high fructose corn syrup. As it became cheaper and cheaper to produce these sugars, they became much more prevalent in our diet. And so 20 years after that large increase in consumption, we started seeing this large increase in colorectal cancer in young people.
Can you provide some background as to how you define sugar in this context?
Well, different sugars, when we say sugar, we mean a lot of different things. Galactose, for example, is the sugar that's in milk. It has no fructose in it. Sucrose, however, does. Sucrose is 50% glucose, 50% fructose. High fructose corn syrup is very similar to sucrose. It's a little higher in fructose, so it's 60% fructose and 40% glucose. But in fact, any sugary drink that tastes sweet definitely has fructose in it, and a combination of roughly 50-50 to 60-40 fructose and glucose. And that would include orange juice and apple juice. So fruit juices will have very similar composition to high fructose corn syrup.
Tell us more about your study.
So we had two possible hypotheses in mind as we began this study. One was that we know that if you drink a lot of sugary beverages, you'll gain weight. That's because the fructose goes straight to the liver, causes fatty liver, very similar to what alcohol can do, and that causes insulin resistance and causes weight gain. And so that's one idea that maybe this is a consequence of obesity. But the other possibility, since these polyps that are turning into colorectal cancer are in the intestinal tract, that the sugar that we're eating is actually going directly to feed the growth of the tumor. And so we looked in order to try to separate out the obesity component versus a direct consumption of sugar. We fed the mice relatively a low amount of sugar per day, but in a drink form. And it's roughly equal to what you would get in a 12-ounce drink that you would buy, 12-ounce soda, for example, that's sugary. And so in that condition, a single 12-ounce drink per day, or equivalent of a single 12-ounce drink a day for a mouse, did not cause obesity. So we didn't see insulin resistance. We didn't see fatty liver. But we still saw a doubling in the rate of growth of these colorectal cancers. And we then were able to follow why this happened. And this could be done using radioactive tracers in the glucose or radioactive tracers in the fructose or other carbon labeling mechanisms to see exactly what's happening to those two sugars as they get consumed by the polyp. And we came up with a mechanism that explains why you have to have exactly those two sugars both together in order to make the polyps grow. So the thing that we're consuming is exactly what the polyp wants in order to be able to grow.
What did you observe about the growth of the polyps?
Yeah, so we used mice that had been genetically engineered to have gene defects in genes that we know cause polyposis syndromes. In other words, calls early stage cancers in children and young adults. So this study was, we knew the mice would come down with polyps. The question was, how aggressive would those polyps be? How fast would they turn into an aggressive tumor? And so the actual number of polyps didn't really change. Every mouse got a lot of polyps, as people who have this genetic predisposition do. But what happened is we accelerated the growth. Now, you would say, well, maybe this is only relevant for people who have these genetic tendencies. But in fact, we know that sporadically these same mutations happen in everyone. Even if you have no genetic predisposition to get colorectal cancer, still every time your intestinal epithelial cells divide, there's a chance that they'll develop one of these errors and a polyp will appear. Now, if that polyp appears when you're 20 years old, it may take 20 to 30 additional years before it actually becomes a dangerous cancer, and you would pick it up in a colonoscopy. But if you accelerate its growth by drinking sugary drinks, it could be a problem before you're 30. And chances are, virtually nobody does a colonoscopy in their 20s. So it wouldn't be picked up early enough to get a removal before it became dangerous. So that's the scary thing about colorectal cancers in young adults, is they're not picked up until they're so advanced that they can be lethal.
How long did it take to see the change in growth?
Well, in mice, everything happens faster because they have accelerated metabolism. They mature much faster than humans, shorter lifespan. So we could see these increased growth of polyps within 2 to 3 months.
So Lou, tell us what implications these findings have for humans.
So we were able to determine exactly how the polyps were able to use the sugar. And again, it required both glucose and fructose for them to grow. And so there are a number of genes that are required first to take up both of these sugars, encoding transporters for the sugars to let the fructose and the glucose into the cell. And then there are enzymes, an enzyme called ketohexokinase that phosphorylates the fructose. And so we ask, are these components also in human polyps? If we go back and look at human polyps, early stage colorectal cancers, and sure enough, we see exactly all those same genes and enzymes that we see in the mice are also present in our polyps. So yes, this is going to work exactly the same way in human polyps.
What would you tell people who already have cancer about these findings?
Yeah, I think the logic that if one already has a colorectal cancer that's still resident in the colon, of course that's where the sugar is going to be, yes, that could accelerate its growth. If you have a polyposis syndrome, yes, that could accelerate the growth of the polyps. So I would definitely recommend anyone who already knows that they have propensity to get or have early-stage colorectal cancer to absolutely avoid all sugary drinks. And I'm including orange juice, apple juice, anything that has tastes sweet and has a combination of fructose and glucose. So that's it's kind of scary, but I think the even scarier part for me is that a lot of healthy young adults who exercise are not obese, but at the end of their exercise, they go drink a sugary drink, sports drinks, for example, to bring back their glucose level after a long exercise. They are going to have the same problem, that if a sporadic polyp shows up somewhere, it's now going to grow very rapidly. So just being healthy and exercising does not protect you from this mechanism of cancer.
Based on this research, what's the ideal future of high fructose corn syrup consumption?
Well, as I said, from the 1950s to the 1970s and 80s, the total consumption of sugary drinks, and even increasing fruit juice, I think, apple juice, for example, instead of eating an apple, we've seen changes in the way people eat. And I think this is what's causing the problem. The truth is, if we eliminated all fructose from our diet, anything that tasted sweet, we would be healthier. There's no nutritional value to to the combination of glucose and fructose. So it's, you know, we do ourselves zero harm, and it would solve so many diseases if we just eliminated, particularly drinks that are sweet. I might add that if you consumed exactly the same amount of fructose and glucose by eating an apple or by squeezing that apple and making it into apple juice, the apple juice will allow the fructose and glucose to get all the way to the colon because the water takes it through the intestinal tract much more rapidly than if you ate the apple. The apple has the same content of sugar, the same components of sugar, but because of the fiber, it moves through the intestine much, much slower. And these sugars get absorbed in the small intestine. They never make it to the polyp. And as a consequence, you don't have this problem.
Based on this research, what's the ideal future of high fructose corn syrup consumption?
Yes. So obviously, in order to make a completely convincing argument, we need to repeat some of these studies in humans. And so we're designing clinical trials now to try to show that for patients, particularly focusing initially on patients who have polyposis syndromes, that we can reduce the rate of those by eliminating any sugary drinks for those patients. So that will be done in a clinical trial setting where we can get the statistics and show that this really is working the way we're quite convinced it is working from our mouse studies. But we really need to go back to humans and make sure that, that we can give a convincing argument to the FDA. And if so, then I think we can have a national recommendations that one should avoid these sugary drinks.
So, Lou, as I know from experience and various dinners, et cetera, I know that you don't consume sugar for yourself, correct?
That's right. I will eat an apple, but I never drink apple juice. I don't drink any sugary beverages at all. I don't add sugar to my tea or coffee. And I've been doing that for almost 40 years. I grew up in West Virginia, and I noticed that a lot of my friends and relatives were gaining dramatic amount of weight. I watched what they were drinking and eating and decided I would just cut the sugar out, and I've maintained the same weight and been pretty healthy for all those years. So I can tell you, you don't have to eat or drink sugar to be healthy.
So you've been doing it for so very long, so it's part of your life. As we close, it's hard for people to give up those things. It's hard for people to look at not putting sugar in their coffee or their tea. Give us your best advice. How can they do what you've done, take from this study, and start that process?
Sugar is an addiction. It has the same addictive tendencies as opioids and cocaine. Stimulates the same part of the brain. It takes a while to break the addiction. Most people can generally do it in 6 weeks or so. But you have to avoid anything sweet, including artificial sweeteners, if you truly want to break the addiction. But it's possible.
Thank you, Lou, very much for this discussion. I'd like to remind our listeners to please download, subscribe, rate, and review CancerCast on Apple Podcasts, Google Play Music, or online at wildcornell.org. We also encourage you to write to us at cancercast@med.cornell.edu with questions, comments, and topics you'd like to see us cover more in depth in the future. That's it for CancerCast, conversations about new developments in medicine, cancer care, and research. I'm Dr. John Leonard. Thanks for tuning in.
Are you or a loved one suffering from the painful side effects of cancer and cancer treatment? Swollen joints, back pain, and surgical complications are, unfortunately, common. Be sure to listen to our podcast about rehabilitation medicine, Back to Health. You'll learn how rehabilitation medicine can help promote wellness during and after cancer treatment.
All information contained in this podcast is intended for informational and educational purposes. The information is not intended nor suited to be a replacement or substitute for professional medical treatment or for professional medical advice relative to a specific medical question or condition. We urge you to always seek the advice of your physician or medical professional with respect to your medical condition or questions. While Cornell Medicine makes no warranty, guarantee, or representation as to the accuracy or sufficiency of the information featured in this podcast, and any reliance on such information is done at your own risk. Participants may have consulting, equity, board, board membership, or other relationships with pharmaceutical, biotech, or device companies unrelated to their role in this podcast. No payments have been made by any company to endorse any treatments, devices, or procedures, and Weill Cornell Medicine does not endorse, approve, or recommend any product, service, or entity mentioned in this podcast. Opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the speaker and do not represent the perspectives of Weill Cornell Medicine as an institution.